Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Real Debaters podcast. I am Michael Petro. Hello, listener. This week on the show, we got a Real Talk session for you with me and just Mark, the two of us. Just the two of us. What are we talking about? We're talking about Marvel. We're talking about superhero suit-ups. And we're going to compare DC to Marvel. Is it the first time they get into the costume? Is it the first reveal of the Iron Man suit? Is it Black Panther's suit-up? Is it Doctor Strange's? Is it even Batman's? It should be Batman's. He's got the coolest toys out of all of them. So that's first topic up for grabs. Second is death. Death is a plot device. Death is a mechanic. Death as part of the story, part of the plot. Who's the godfather of death? Who kills the most characters on screen? I think we all knew who that is. Game of Thrones. And a lot more stuff. So that's me and Mark. That's what's on the show. That's who's on the show. Housekeeping, events, and the like. April 27th, kids, if you haven't heard this before, you're going to hear it today. Movie Trivia Night with the Real Debaters, live from the Little Brown Jug. Three rounds of movie trivia. First round, general movie knowledge. Second round, the great 80s. Third round, Disney and Pixar. These are going to be questions that have some of the answers in them and are fun. We will be doing some of our worst impressions. We're going to have clips. There's a production budget attached to this. So it's not your standard movie trivia where someone just asks you questions. We like to engage. We like to have fun. We will be in the crowd with you. Tickets are $5. They're cheap. Okay. They're on sale right now at eventbrite.ca, Eventbrite the app. However you Eventbrite, go buy your tickets. There's only 60 of them. Limited capacity. So if you want to be there and you don't want FOMO, $5 right now, Eventbrite. April 27th, Little Brown Jug, 336 William Avenue in the heart of the Exchange. We will be there. We hope to see you there. And that's it. That's all. Oh, yeah, link in our bio. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube all have the link to our bio in them. What that is a list of all the people, all of the things, all of the accolades that we've gotten. It's just there for you to take a look at. At the top of one of those social media platforms, in the link in bio, you can buy tickets. So if you're following us on Instagram right now, hit that link, go buy your tickets. Teams of four. I must stress that. We can't have more than teams of four because then it's just too damn easy. Got to have a challenge. Anyways, I got nothing else for you. So I will cue that reel and you enjoy the show.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet. 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody, to the official space section of the Charter.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Debaters podcast. I'm Michael Petro.
I'm Mark Cowell here.
Welcome to Where the Art of Cinema Meets the Power of Debate, ladies and gentlemen. This week on the show, we've got a real talk for you. We are going to go through our favorite suit-up scenes. Mark has been chatting in the chat room, and it keeps coming up every so often. What are our 10 favorite Marvel movies? And I figured we'd soft ramp it in and start talking about it now so that we get it in the ether. And then we're all going to sit down as a cast, and we're going to do a top 10 list. We're each going to give our – I think that was the idea, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's going to happen. People are fucking shitting on Marvel movies as of late, but –
yeah, there's a lot of drama with Victoria Alonso just left.
Exactly. I was just listening to that. And, we'll see if things are going to change dramatically or not.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get into that, listener. But, so we're going to start with our real talk this week with the best suit-ups. You know that moment when the character suits up into their amazing costume? We're going to review a bunch of those, probably talk about superpowers for a bit, too, and just why those scenes are so pivotal to superhero movies, because they're flat, like they're everywhere, right?
Yes.
Every single, even the shitty little brother DC does them.
Yes, there's the standards. Well, there's like the different types of suit ups, right? There's like the first time suit up. There's the big critical moment suit up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, so and so comes to rescue the day suit up.
Doctor Strange, Doctor Strange 2 at the wedding.
Yes.
And then throwing on the outfit under the suit and taking off.
Yes.
Or the first time Doctor Strange gets the cape. Which is the better of the two?
Ah.
I think that's what we might get into today. And then we're going to follow that up with death. Lots of death. Not depressing death, listener. But on-screen death. What a death to a character means for us, for you, for the story. How is the death played? Is it a cheesy death? Is it a graphic death?
Is it a psychologically twisted death?
Yeah.
Where you don't need to see what happened, you just know, and that's worse.
Yeah, where you get to imagine on your own.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen on screen, and then it's all
right. The non-gore mess you, mess with your mind. Like, what's in the box, Steph?
What's in the box? I want to get your take on that, because it's one of those like 10 questions in cinema where like, what's in the box in Seven, right? And I've talked to many people. We've even talked about this on the show before, but we'll chew the yarn on that in a minute. So that's what's on the show for you this week, listener. Advertisements, events, housekeeping stuff. If you haven't followed String Bean Comics already, Mark is part of a comic co-op. One might say.
Yeah, let's call it that. Comic collective,
I think that's better, too. Yeah. Yes. And what that collective is a bunch of comic book nerds have combined their stock to offer some of the best in the collections that they have for you. So if you're interested in comic books, Mark, where can they find this information?
They can find us on Facebook is probably the place where we are the most. String Bean Comics. We're also on Instagram, Stringbean Comics 204, I believe, is our Instagram handle.
Okay.
And yeah, most of the stuff we do is on Facebook right now, because Facebook has a huge culture of collectibles auctions, which I didn't really realize.
Interesting.
So people start Facebook groups, and then within the groups, they actually host live auctions and use like posts with comments for bidding. It's pretty cool.
That is really neat.
Yeah, I didn't even know it existed, and apparently it's been a thing for a long time, but it's big in the comic community. Somebody will post, like, the lot. These are coming up on Wednesday. Bids start. They run from Wednesday to Friday, and as you bid, if you get outbid, the person who's running the auction likes your comment, which means you've been outbid. So that you can go back to Facebook. So they use the Facebook mechanics to run sort of an auction over a couple days.
That's really neat.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
Awesome. And like, do you guys have any of your stuff on your Facebook page for people to check out?
We do, yeah. There's a couple albums on the Facebook page of some of the higher end books right now. We're moving towards trying to get more and more of our stuff up there. I'm in the process of trying to track down a good flatbed scanner for like books.
Not easy.
Like pictures, books. I've tried a few scanners and they don't work so great. So I've heard like maybe some document scanners work really well. I need like high res, but
listener, if you have a high res scanner and you're in Winnipeg, reach out to Mark.
Yeah, I don't know what the best ones are. Apparently there's ones that are fantastic, and I think they're ones that maybe like not around as much anymore, like just those really small ones.
Oh,
apparently
like
amazing.
Thin. Yeah.
Yeah, like I tried the big plug-in. Giant expensive ones and it works like shit, so.
Yeah. Don't always get what you pay for.
Exactly.
Cool. There you go, listener. And like, I can tell you, I went to, what was the one at the Kubota Center?
The
Kubota?
C4. Kubota Center, Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Put on by the
Cobra Collectibles.
Cobra Collectibles that used to put on the Central Canada Comic-Con C4.
There you go.
Yes.
And I went to that, and he shepherded me through. He took me up the mountain and walked me around and pointed out a specific style of comic book that I want to start collecting. And what did you say the comic was? The style of cover that I was like, wow, that's fucking awesome.
So they're the variant cover market. So collecting artists that do virgin variant covers for various comics. And they're collected more for the art.
Yes.
Regardless of what book is behind
yes.
it. Yes. They're collected for the art, the uniqueness, the quite often the rareness of the variant covers, availability and stuff. So,
yeah.
And the virgin part being that there's no title or trade dress, as they call it. You don't have Thor across your picture.
Yeah, or like the issue numbering
yeah.
or the...
They put that on the back.
Okay.
Yeah. So at Variant Comics, huge...
fucking
gorgeous.
Huge
following. And that's where the real, like the big cover artists get their followings from. You kind of get into one particular person and then you'll follow their style.
Yeah.
There's the ones that are like particularly like, I don't want to say gruesome. Like there's people that are particularly gruesome. There's people that lean towards the sexy side of comics. There's people that lean towards the cartoonish side of comics. And it's wherever you're kind of, you know, where you fit in there. And it's kind of neat. Yeah.
It just like when you showed them to me, I was like, okay, this is something I can get a handle on because I like pretty things, right? I like hanging
yeah.
shit on the wall. If you know, if we don't show pictures to this place, we should. But so like as soon as I saw that, I was like, awesome. So like if you're kind of on the edge of starting a collection, there's something for everybody is my point here.
They make a great display comic book because the cover is really the heart and soul of it, as opposed to
totally
some other comics where you look at it and it's some boring
meh.
Cover and you'd be like, hey, that's the first time that so-and-so appeared in a comic. You're like, well, they're not even on the cover. Like, why do I want it?
Yeah.
If I can't open it. So, yeah.
Cool.
This is for the cover fans in the world.
Also, besides how to get involved in comics in Winnipeg, if you want more information, it's at StringBeanComics204 on Instagram and StringBeanComics on Facebook. We, the Real Debaters, are hosting a trivia night. And it's April 27th at Little Brown Jugs.
It's a Thursday, right?
It's a Thursday.
Nobody's got other plans on a Thursday.
No, nobody. That's the point of why we did it on a Thursday. We didn't want to compete with Friday downtown.
There's no excuses to not be there.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. And the other excuse that you don't have is cost. They're $5 tickets.
Who doesn't like trivia?
Who doesn't like movie trivia?
Who doesn't like beer?
Right? And all the, we're offering all those things. And then there's three rounds. So there's going to be three winning teams. These teams can only be teams of four, sadly, because there's only so much room. 60 tickets available for you guys. That's not a sell. It's like it's not a gimmick. It's just straight up occupancy. We don't want to have to bribe the fire commissioner to let you all in. But that being said, it's general movie knowledge trivia. And if you win, we send you to the movies. We're going to send all the four. If you all want to go as a date, go. We're going to give you passes. You do what you want with them when you're done. $5 a ticket, 7 to 9 p.m. As Mark said, delicious beer. And like, if you've been to a thing that we do, two things. They usually are pretty crazy and loud and fun.
Interactive.
Very interactive. That's the point I want to make. We're going to have a small production budget is allocated for this evening.
I may be biased, but we may be the best trivia night in the game, and we haven't even started yet.
Exactly. We have no proof of this, but we're fairly confident that you will agree where we're going to be in our, you might hear impressions of some of, as a hint, you might get an impression out of one of us. We'll have
banter galore.
Lots of banter, right? It's not just question and answer and it goes quiet. We like to have fun. And we're also going to have clips to help you figure shit out if, you know, you want to bring grandma.
Multimedia interactive trivia.
You need to do our branding because I can't.
Come on.
It's the trivia like this.
All this for $5, Michael?
Yeah, I know. I don't know my own value. That's the problem.
Can you afford not to go?
You can't, because you know what's more expensive than $5? FOMO. It's more taxing on your anxiety. You're going to be
absolutely.
Like, absolutely. I could have been there. I could have been a Little Brown Jug. And then we don't know when we're going to do one of these again. We probably will. But we don't know when. So come and experience
Heck,
it.
I just read that the minimum wage in Manitoba on October 1st is going up to $15.30 an hour.
That's three tickets.
That's 20 minutes of your day to get into the Little Brown Jug.
That's 20 all you minutes. Had to do. 20 minutes. Easy.
I tell you.
Tickets are online right now. You can buy them on Eventbrite app or website. Search the Real Debaters Trivia Night. Or go to the link in our bio, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. That's Real Debaters Pod on Twitter and Instagram, R-E-E-L for the spelling. And the Real Debaters Podcast on Facebook. Buy your tickets. You don't want to hear about this on the next episode of the show that we sold it out. It was super fun. Everybody got drunk. Someone took their shirt off and won free movie passes. I'm making stuff up.
Yeah.
So do it. And yeah, that's about
it. Trivia nights are fun.
If this goes off well, I can see a Simpsons. I can see a Seinfeld. I can see themes. I can see lots of. I can see a traveling circus.
Genre movie themed trivia nights.
80s movie trivia night.
Oh yeah, now you're talking.
Right, we're pitching the people.
We could throw some costumes in soon. Oh, you never know.
Yeah. Seriously.
We just need some people to show up.
Yeah, and that's you guys. So fucking show up. Anyways, let's kick it off here. Let's step off this mortal coil and talk about film. Mark, what did you watch this week?
What did I watch this week, Michael? Well, I'm going to dip into two things that I watched. One was an HBO show. I watched the
Hobo.
The season finale of The Last of Us.
Talk to me, Goose.
Oh, I see what you did there. A little foreshadowing. I think it's fantastic. I think The Last of Us is... I didn't play the video game again. We've talked about it a little bit. I know people are praising it. From my point of view, The Last of Us has brought back the humanity into the post-apocalyptic storyline.
Oh, wow.
This is what, to me, and I think a lot of people, that The Walking Dead lost. You stopped caring about the characters as much. It lost its heart, if you will. The Last of Us has the big bad, you know, the cordyceps that are ruling the world, taking over the world, if you will, that are at every corner. But it manages to only show the cordyceps, whatever you want to call them, zombies,
clickers,
for maybe, I don't know, 5%. of the entire show.
Yeah.
You know, it's more the thought that they exist, and then the story is the people, and that's what I love.
I agree with you, man. Like, I've called out that aspect of the show and been like, aren't we supposed to be shooting zombies and, you know, these mushrooms aren't so fungi after all. But at the end of it, yeah, when you see the humanity and the turmoil and what would happen to humanity, not yes. just humanity dealing with.
And you see it still manages to take things from a different perspective than The Walking Dead. Like, even in 10 seasons, The Walking Dead.
Jesus, 10?
Didn't. Yeah, I think it was 10 seasons.
Robert Kirkman, stop
still
it.
Still didn't pull at my heartstrings or gave me the care factor that I cared about these characters in one season.
You mean Carl didn't break your heart?
not like this one. No, it's just not the same. But yeah, it's fantastic. I think they're doing something right, and I hope they keep doing it and find a way to keep living up to the high standards that they set.
The stuff I've read, which is countless, so don't fact check me because probably half it's wrong. But the stuff I have read is we're going to combine two games into one season next year. Like, they're going to fast track a little bit of it.
Oh, I thought it was the opposite. I heard that they were going to break game two into two seasons.
Sorry, that's it. That is correct. Yes. See, like I said, don't fact check me. So we're going to get some insanity. We're going to get more cordyceps, but it's already anchored in the human survival, the human condition, the human spirit. So you can throw the whole season cordyceps at me. I'm still going to care more about Joel and Ellie than I ever thought I would.
Another thing I really liked about The Last of Us is more urban settings. That's what I was always missing from The Walking Dead. I just keep drawing the comparison between The Walking
Dead.
They're
very similar, yeah.
Because of the post-apocalyptic idea. Yeah. But I like the urban setting. I like the high rise. I like the, you know, there's something about, I know that it's expensive to shoot, you know, for a long period of time, but I really like it. I like that they've gone back to the urban centers as opposed to just being in the bush the whole time.
Yeah, like a prison. When, like, what, season 4 or 5 of Walking Dead with the Colonel?
I liked the prison. You
like the one place.
Well, as soon as you narrow it down, then the subtleties come out, and I like the subtleties.
Well, it's all in dialogue,
the
right?
The devil's in the details, as they say.
Ooh, look at you, quotey-quotey.
Yeah, so it was good. Yeah, definitely, if you haven't watched it, there's no reason not to.
What did you think of, because I've talked this to death with Jimmy and Charles and Martin and everything, because they play the game, they're replaying the games right
yes.
now, like they are balls deep in The Last of Us. But what did you think of that end finale, that sequence? The shootout in the hospital is what I'm
saying. You know what? It was good. And you could actually see, that was probably the first time being like the non-gamer, the way
yes,
they
yes,
shot it
yes.
felt like a game.
I said that to Charles. I said...
it felt like a first-person shooter as he was going through the hospital.
What made you think that?
A third-person shooter?
Sure. You can change angle, but...
But no, it totally felt... Just the way that he was, like, going through, shooting people, coming around corners, it just... They shot it like the view in a video game.
Charles made the joke of, like, some people were like, why isn't Joel going to get a med pack? Why isn't Joel going to get another, like, to clip up, right? And it's like, well, you can only do so much.
Well, he kind of did, though, right? He shot his gun till it was empty
yes.
and grabbed another gun.
That's what made me think yeah. of it. But it was the single bolt action to semi-automatic.
Yes.
That's where my brain went, because that's how I play video games. You rank up. You
and I think
level
he's got
up.
The AK, and then he runs out, and then he grabs, like, an AR, and
yep.
then he runs out, then he grabs a handgun. You know, it's just like whatever you can get your hands on that's laying on the ground. And that, it totally felt like a video game the way it was shot.
And I leaned over at Sean the whole season. I was like, video game sequence, video game sequence.
But in a good way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's like the power of like Craig Zahler, the showrunner and Neil Druckmann. It's like the power of what happens when you take a guy who's really passionate about storytelling in video games.
Yes.
And a guy who's passionate about storytelling and television, and you mesh them together. You get this weird, like, I didn't have a problem. I just noticed it. It would be like 59-minute episode, hour and 20-minute episode, 44 minutes. I'm like, what the?
Yeah.
But that's where the game took over, and they ended it almost at save points.
100%.
And then the
100%.
Next episode, so it may not be as long in format as we're used to, but the save point for the gamer was taken into consideration.
Yeah. No, it was definitely called out to the where it came from, and that was good. Really, really liked it.
Last question. When Joel lies to Ellie.
Oh, yeah. You know that's going to come back.
Would you do that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, he views her now as a daughter-esque
pseudo daughter, yeah, for sure.
Figure.
Yeah.
And he's protecting her. Like, that's all it is. And he wants to continue to protect her. He protected her physically. Now he's going to, thinking he's going to be protecting her, you know,
yeah,
mentally. When you know that always backfires.
For sure. Like, that's foreshadowing. We know that conversation's coming. But he carried out Ellie just like he carried out his daughter. Yeah. And
I honestly think Ellie probably would have chose to sacrifice herself to help other people.
Yeah.
So it's going to be against her own wish.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Which, yeah, we'll see what happens. How many stuffed cordyceps out of 10 do you give it? With crab.
You know what? It was I'm giving it a 9. Like, it's very, very good. Yeah. And a couple episodes were better than a 9, right? You know, like, it's all in all, it's a really solid show, and it had some stellar moments of, you know, some people say some of the best moments on TV that we've had in a long, long time.
Oh, fucking Frank and Bill's performances are the performances of the year.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Easily. What was the other thing?
The other thing I watched?
Yeah.
I watched a movie.
Yeah. What kind of movie?
A popular one.
Yeah. How much money did it make?
A lot.
Who was in it?
Val Kilmer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Who was Rooster?
I couldn't even remember the actor's name. Jennifer Connelly was in it.
Jennifer Connelly was in it.
She was in it. Very good.
John Hamm was in it.
John Hamm.
Yeah.
Stellar performance. I think that's about it. There's a couple of supporting characters, but yes, it was a Tom Cruise movie.
I got it on tape.
Finally watched Maverick.
It's Miles Teller, by the way.
Now, that's right. Now, I have said in the past that Top Gun was one of the few Tom Cruise movies that I really
enjoyed. You are on record. That is true.
And it does have a lot of nostalgia. And I think going into watching this movie, people built it up so much. Because everybody from every walk of my life said they enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But I kind of maybe expected it to be different. I still enjoyed it. But the way they talked, I expected this like masterpiece of cinema. when really it was a lot of fan service.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't, and the people that were saying they liked it weren't even fans, so they weren't coming from that fan. Maybe they didn't know they were getting fan serviced. Is that a term? Fan serviced?
Yeah, it is now.
But yeah, they just felt the nostalgia, I think. Like, it was cool. The scenes in the planes are obviously awesome.
Yeah.
Would have made me dizzy as fuck if I saw it in IMAX.
Yeah, it was not easy in the theater.
I needed it on the small screen, honestly.
Fuck your small screen. That's not small.
Well, at home where I could sit back from it.
Yeah.
But no, it was good. The fan service was great. The story, even though I know where the story was going, even though I knew how the rooster goose saving lives play, it was going to play out somewhere like that. I still enjoyed it. Like, you know, it's one of those things that you could read from a mile away, but you still wanted it to happen, and you still enjoyed it when it happened. Got a little cheesy when they're like both on the ground and they go steal the F-14.
Third act, yeah, Russia.
But
in the
you know that
act,
was a
yeah.
little bit silly.
Yeah.
But they needed to put him in that F-14 somehow, and that's the only way that they could pull it off, right? So yeah,
these controls are in Russian.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be a problem, Mav. You flow this thing for a couple of years.
So no, it was pretty cool. It was good. I enjoyed it. They did a good job of kind of encompassing things. I like the way they added Jennifer Connelly's character as like that was just a hinted reference.
Yeah.
In
the general's daughter.
Yeah, right. The admiral's daughter.
Admiral, thank you.
Yeah, saying something about he's I can't remember what the wording was, but something along he buzzed five towers and an admiral's daughter.
Zing.
And then I think they even used her name.
Yes.
Yeah.
Peggy? No.
I forget. It might have been. But yeah, it was pretty cool how it all came to play out, and I enjoyed it.
It only won one Oscar, by the way.
Well, that's good.
One sound.
But it's a very entertaining movie, and I'll give it to them. It was good.
Was it worth the 2 years? That's what we weighed against, right? Like, not you waiting 2 years. I mean, you would have waited forever if you could have. But like, what I mean is, he delayed 2 years. He fought tooth and nail. So knowing that you could have seen this,
I think the reason that they like holding off to the theater for a lot of people that wouldn't have vomited in those jet scenes, they're very unique. I mean, like when you're in that cockpit and things are crossing up and flying, like it's insane. You know, that's stuff that you can't fake.
It's like half a VR headset.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And, you know, if I wouldn't have become so probably motion sick, it would be incredible to see on a big screen and actually feel it. Or, like, I don't know if it was in 3D. Was there a...
Maybe. I don't know. I can't do 3D.
It's something that needed to be done in the big theater for a lot of people, right? Yeah. It's one of those movies.
Yeah, totally. And it saved Hollywood and saved the movie industry. And
it came at the right time. I think a lot of that had to do, its success had a lot to do with putting it out at the right time. And I think whoever was in charge of that,
it's him.
Did a good job.
I don't want to give him credit. I know you don't, but you have to. just bow down to the Temple of Cruise.
It was good.
What do you think? Like, the Mission Impossible stuff, they just released the poster for it, which so happens to be that stupid stunt they were showing for like 6 weeks online. Motorcycle stunt.
Right? I don't know. I'm not paying attention to it. Mission Impossible?
Yeah. Yes, you may have heard of this.
This is a new... That's the British show. It was fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. It was on like after school in the 60s. No, they show him doing a motorcycle jump and then like off with the parachute.
Yeah, I've heard. I didn't see it, but I've heard it's
just impressive. The poster. Yeah. It's the poster of the jump.
You know he's going to die doing a stunt. There's no other way that he's... Well, he might not die.
How's that make you feel? You want to see him go in a blaze of glory?
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he's living that the day after tomorrow, like, or whatever it is. It's like in real life.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Live, Die, Repeat.
Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, I want that to be the title. Get rid of Edge of Tomorrow. Netflix, you've got it. Just call it Live, Die, Repeat. It's way better fucking title.
It was good. It was good.
How many?
Oh, don't make me rate it.
I'm gonna. How many tower
buzzes? For a Tom Cruise movie, it was a 10 out of 10.
But
for a like standard movie, yeah, solid 7.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
7.5.
Fan service galore. I totally agree. There
wasn't any groundbreaking theatrical performances.
No.
No.
Everybody was phoning that in. Like, we want you to be a hot shot pilot. Okay. Be arrogant.
Yeah.
Done. But
even the dropping out of the window and being caught by the daughter, like that's kind of like an 80s trope, like romantic comedy trope, right?
Yeah.
So
there's a story that when Miles Teller got blood poisoning from fuel because they were in the planes for so long.
Oh, geez.
And so he went to sick bay because they're on a military base. So he went to the actual fucking sick bay, took the day, came back next morning, sees Tom Cruise walking on set. Tom Cruise is like, you okay? He's like, yeah, I had jet fuel in my blood. And without missing a beat, Tom Cruise looks at him. He says, yeah, I was born with that. And just walks on the set. You can't see this, listener, but there's a giant eye roll. my seat just shook from the way his eyes rolled in his head. But like,
wow.
I mean, like he lives.
That sounds like a Chuck Norris joke.
Oh, but he lives the part, though. That's the movie star era.
I know he does.
And I agree with you. Like, he's not.
Does he really look that young, or is that some CGI in there?
I think it's some CGI.
Me too.
Yeah, because I saw him at the premieres, and I saw him doing the rounds, and I was like, you're getting a little crow's feet there, buddy.
I mean, he's doing a great job.
Sure.
Of not aging very much, but I think he was also aided by some.
If I had a blood baby, I wouldn't age either, Mark.
Exactly.
If Rob was here, we'd be talking about adrenochrome in about 5 minutes.
Oh, 100%. No, it was good. Yeah.
Cool.
No.
Yeah. No, I...
It's been talked to death, but I finally saw it, and...
I'm glad. I'm very glad. I've watched like older movies, like stuff that I've watched a few times. The newer stuff that like I think someone should watch is hang on here. I'm going to bring it up on my Crave because I'm old. I'll Be Gone in the Dark is the title of it. And I think it's 3 or 4 part miniseries. I'm only halfway through the second episode, but I love it. As me and Mark maybe have mentioned on the show in the past, our better halves love true crime. And Patton Oswalt even makes a joke in this series where he's talking about his wife. I'll preface the series before I get to the joke. The series is about the East Area Rapist, otherwise known as the Golden State Killer. And Patton Oswalt's wife is an internet sleuth. And at the time, she found out about this and was like, this can't be. Like, the Zodiac gets too much attention. The Night Stalker gets too much attention. This guy's raped over 50 women. They've been home invasions. People have had to sell their homes. 12 murders, like, ridiculous, and nobody could catch him. And he'd been doing it since the 70s. So she picks up internet sleuth and solves the case. Breaks the case. I shouldn't say solves it.
Is there like a group? Is there an internet sleuthing group?
Yes, there is.
Don't Fuck with Cats?
Very Don't Fuck with Cats, but old school, like message boards.
Oh,
right?
Yes, and exactly.
Stuff where people would leave the clues that they had found for someone else to pick up and run with it.
Okay.
And she had a blog, Truth Crimers or something like that, and she approached it with sensitivity and some respect of the topic, where everybody else was being like really graphic about it, and yeah. she could get things like there's a clip of her, and it's all audio tapes because she's sadly passed away.
Yes.
So you hear her audio tapes that she recorded over the course of her investigation, and she gets someone who signed an NDA to not release all of the files from the crimes, and she convinces them within a matter of 5 minutes to be like, all right, you can take those home with you and review them. And it's 4,000 pages of crime scene evidence and documents and whatnot. Anyways, it's the story of that. It's fucking so insane because you get all the couples that survived who are willing to be interviewed. You get the side from Patton, who's talking about what it was like. And what I mean with me and Mark and the shared experiences is that both of our partners love true crime. Our houses are narrated by, and he has got a joke about it where he's like, and there was semen in the chest cavity. And that's what's playing in the other room. And that's what he talks about, is what it was like to, Michelle McNamara is her name, what it was like to experience going through it all. If you're a true crime lover, dig it. Get into it. It's really awesome.
Cool.
And, was the other thing I watched.
And that's what I was mentioning to you earlier, how it's kind of permeated Patton's life.
Yes.
On Veronica Mars, he played a character that led a group of internet sleuths that were tracking a killer there. Spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Veronica Mars, it's pretty old.
It's okay.
The movie, he turns out to be the killer, and he's the one leading the group to find the killer.
He's got a ton of he's got a ton of stuff to pull from.
I tell you.
Apparently.
Yeah. It's very unassuming looking guy, you know. It's tough to believe he'd murder anybody.
Yeah. I don't really think people who are 5'6" have a lot of threatening qualities about them.
He just has a happy, like,
he's a jolly fucker.
A welcoming face.
He does.
Yeah.
MODOK or otherwise. I also stepped back in Survivor Tournament of Champions. Are you caught up on Tournament of Champions?
I'm caught up, yeah.
I can't believe Shota took out the what's her name? The big tall brunette, the leather jacket.
Antonia LaFossa.
I was so happy when Shota knocked her out. And then,
well, there's some
big upsets.
Some real Brit,
yeah,
is doing incredible. She's knocked off like last year's right,
champion.
She beat Tiffany.
Faison. Yeah, Tiffany Faison.
And
yeah.
then she just knocked off somebody else.
Oh,
pretty
yeah,
big.
She took on Super Chef Darnell.
She knocked off Darnell. Yeah.
Both have TV shows. Both are well acclaimed Food Network celebrities.
Yeah, she's tearing through them now.
Shauna's rooting for her.
Yeah, I like her a lot, and she's like a fan.
Yeah,
you know, like she's like just happy to be there with these people, and she's kicking butt. So that's nice to see.
It's I love the new wheel on the randomizer, the wild card wheel.
Yes.
That's really shaking things up, letting the audience repick, moving two up and down. Like I don't think Guy Fieri can make a bad production.
No, he definitely knows what the combination that sells.
Bleach blonde hair, huge rings.
He's a cheese ball, but he manages to put together good programs.
Yeah, it's like he knows, and he said it before, he knows that this is what people expect, but it's not what's underneath.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have a Camaro in the driveway and, you know, a mullet. Like,
he doesn't stick himself into it very much, which I like. He's just on the periphery.
Yeah.
Right? He's the host. He has Simon Majumdar there, like, you know, asking the questions and getting involved and reporting. Like, he doesn't stick his nose in it, like, because he wants to hear his own voice, which is...
I think
it's a good formula. Exactly.
Guy's Grocery is enough.
Yeah. No, it's good. I'm enjoying it. It's our favorite cooking.
Well, we talk Top Chef when we're all hanging out together, and it's like you're the only other people that know.
And I've realized just how many, like, I'm excited about who, like, the guest judge is going to be near the finale.
Right?
We're trying to determine who it's going to be.
Jonathan Waxman, Andrew Zimmern.
What's her name? Nancy Silver.
Nancy Silverton.
The
pizza dough queen.
There's a couple other people that just unexpectedly, a couple of people I didn't know on this last episode, the Mexican chef.
I didn't know her either. Yeah.
No, I didn't know her, but she comes with high regards.
The guy from Chopped, I swear he does lines before he judges food because he just, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever put in my mouth. Oh my God, give me more. calm down, Scott. Like, it's
Scott,
it's,
Scott, yeah, Kunitz or whatever.
Yeah. Top Chef Royal or Chopped Royalty.
Yeah.
What do you think of Top Chef, the 20th anniversary with the Ultra World Chefs?
It's been a bit underwhelming so far, to be honest with you. Yeah, a little bit underwhelming so far.
For going to London, and I mean, the cool aspect is watching like a Ukrainian Polish chef be like,
that is neat.
Yeah. I know potato. I don't know any other starch. Yeah. Right? Like, I feel
that
you.
That line was great. Yeah.
I don't know how to make this crust.
I make pasta with potato.
Exactly. But yeah, I feel a little underwhelmed with it too.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe it'll get better. Who knows?
Whatever. So yeah, I'll eat.
I do like Buddha.
When he opens his mouth, I'm just like, I don't know where you're coming from, dude. The accent messes with your look, and he's fantastic. His fucking skill set's I think he's going to take it. I really do.
He's one of my front runners for sure, yeah.
Who else is the Canadian guy? I hope he goes. I just vote for Canada because I hope they go far, but I don't think he's like the Saskatchewan dude.
Yeah,
the
no.
Handlebar mustache.
I don't feel, no.
Oh, whatever.
Anyways.
So,
Let's
move on.
Reality TV. Yeah. Isn't really our purview, but
no, it's just what relaxes me at night before I go to bed because it's easy watching.
You need a little break between drama to experience some real life.
There's four kinds of watching. I've put this into a quadrant. Let's see if I can remember. Ooh. There's active watching, phone down,
yes,
locked on screen.
You need to pay attention to everything that's happening.
Dialogue, subtitles on.
Oh, there you go.
56 minutes, I'm in it. Right
there, you go.
Then there's passive watching, which is Survivor, which is Top Chef, or a procedural Thursday night primetime show, Friends.
Or a movie that you're familiar with, you've seen it a couple times.
Right, yeah, you're watching
background
for feel-good.
Noise.
Exactly. Okay. Then there's hate watching.
Hate watching.
Which is where you're watching something and it makes you hate the topic, and you can't stop. Succession would be my hate watch.
All right.
Because I hate those fucking rich pricks. And every time I watch it, I get angry. And I want to throw shit at the TV. So that's hate watching. And then, actually, maybe there's only three. That's three that I definitely nailed down for sure. So whatever I'm watching, I'm like, is this an active? Is this a passive? Or is this a hate watch? Like,
well, and then there's the sort of reality TV, which falls into your sort of passive watching.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I don't know. Like, what do they call it with meals? A relev. Which is like the palate cleanser in between courses.
Okay.
Right? So if you're consuming a whole bunch of drama and movies and fiction,
yes,
it's nice to take like little breaks with pseudo real life.
Yeah.
Where people aren't acting per se. Even though they're
kind of acting.
It's scripted, but they're not actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They're not assuming a character.
Yeah. And then you got to go back and forth. Too much of one thing kind of.
Yeah. Like four episodes of Handmaid's Tale takes a lot out of me.
Yeah, and you can't go from one super, you know, intense series to something else. Like, you need a break.
You need
a hockey game.
Yeah.
Like, for me, sports is a lot of that, right? Where I can have it on and I can do other things and I don't need to focus. But, like, yes. There's a movie that I really want to watch.
Shut up. Don't talk to me. I'm watching.
I just haven't found the right time to watch it.
You are very selective,
right?
With that. Like, it,
and it's. I know I want to watch it. I just can't squeeze it in because it's not a squeeze in.
Yeah.
Movie. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Haven't seen it yet, but it's because I can't find a block of 2.5 hours to focus only on the TV and not have a dog, Chrissy around, noises, need to be somewhere, you know, where I can just turn it on and watch.
Zero responsibility.
Yes.
There should...
I think it deserves my full attention.
You'll love it. I think it feels good. Hits you in the feelings. And Ki Kwan, I've been screwing this up ever since we started talking about this. Short round from the Oscars. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. From Indiana Jones. Fucking amazing. Like, it's so crazy to watch a guy who hasn't done anything for a very long time and pick it up like he has.
How amazing was it, Harrison Ford announcing, like, oh, come on.
I was crying when that happened during the Oscars. Like, and you know what? As soon as he stepped out, I was like, I think this is what's happening.
That's
right?
Amazing.
Because you don't accidentally do that.
No.
They
plan that
months out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I watched. There you go, listener. You got some true crime. You got some new movies. You got some new shows. If you're one of the last people who hasn't watched The Last of Us, fucking do it.
Yeah. Get on it. Get it out of the way. There's lots of good other stuff out there.
Yeah.
I started season 2 of Hunters too.
So do I.
Recommend.
Very so do good. I. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's intense.
Chasing Hitler, pretty intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a comic or graphic novel, was it?
Was it? I don't know. We'll save it for another time.
Yeah, definitely. I got Swarm too, which we can save for another day.
All right.
So, as mentioned at the top of the show, listener, we got two lovely topics for you. We're trying to trim the fat off the show these days. So the first one up, it's pretty simple stuff. Superhero movies. There's superhero exhaustion, which is a thing now. I've heard it in the ether, right? You're getting tired of the superhero movie, the big tentpole. But there are moments in these movies that are there for a reason, and they're fucking fun to watch. And we're going to talk about them, which is the suit-up scene. When the character either gets their costume for the first time or suits up for an actual pivotal scene, they always give a little extra to that. And it always, I don't know, am I wrong?
Sometimes it's a real suit-up.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a air quote suit up.
Ooh, interesting.
You know, there's an example that I thought of during this that was sort of a, I want to call it a suit.
Give me your first pick.
It'll come later on. Okay. No, it's not. It's something that wasn't your typical suit up.
I love how you do that because you always figure out how to worm in like something that people forget or.
Because I know on our list we have, like, in the superhero genre, we're going to have, like, Iron Man, right? We're
going to
have
some
sort of Iron Man nanotech or first suit up.
No,
or,
let's not. Let's not today.
Right? So the one I'm going to, I'll give my honorable mention before we even get into it.
Sure, yeah.
That made me think of it because I knew Iron Man was going to be there. But the scene from Iron Man 2 when he does the house party protocol. Is a pretty cool suit up scene because suddenly all of these Mark suits start appearing. Like that's like the suits up, right?
Suits up. Hey DJ, give me a fat beat to beat my buddy's ass to.
So that was pretty cool, right? Like that's sort of a suit up scene with multiple suits.
Well, and that's the reveal of all the mocks too,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
He's been fucking around.
So the house party protocol was pretty cool.
House party protocol. And that's like, I mean, Rob won our Comic-Con debate with Iron Man being the Iron Man camp. Like, he just, the default goes to Iron Man because it's a toy.
Yes.
Which I feel a lot of other people kind of get fall by the wayside. Mine's actually on the list, which we'll wait to get to, so let's just jump right into it.
All righty.
So, did you see the Marvel show? You watched it, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, because this clip isn't from, or is this from the movie? Because I don't remember the movie that
I don't remember this clip.
Captain Marvel's glowing outfit. I don't remember this scene. I think this might be in the TV show.
No.
Captain Marvel has one
I
of the
think
most-
this is from one of the scenes where it's like near the end of the...
Is it an end credit trailer?
It's near the end of the show where they're back like at the house and a young Monica...
Yeah, Monica Rambeau.
Is talking to her about her suit now that she's got her powers and everything. And then she's... I think that's where it's from, if I do recall.
It looks fucking awesome because it starts to do all these fun, different things.
Yeah, where she can turn it into a bunch of different things.
Yeah. Her costume is really badass to begin with.
It's pretty cool.
And when you... I didn't know the binary thing until you taught me that. It's like... It's almost Dragon Ball Z-esque.
Well, especially when she busts out like the mohawk kind of look with the, yeah, that's pretty wild.
Her flipped over.
Yeah.
That haircut on her, I was like, cowabunga, come
Well, in the
closer.
Comics, it's like a full-blown
mohawk?
Blonde mohawk. Yeah.
Why couldn't they do that? I don't know. Captain Marvel's power doesn't come from her suit. Like, everybody I feel who gets a suit, there's some sort of aspect that suit is in play. Her power is strictly her. Like, she could be in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, and she's still the most powerful.
The suit's not really necessary.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, you can't make a superhero without a fucking costume. It says, what does it say here? Among the glowing suit that accentuated the suit's design, giving off a sense of powerful positivity, the many transitions between the suit's appearances made this memorable suit-up scene, even if it lacked a grand sense to it. Yeah, that's because we don't remember it. This is my number 9, the Avengers preparing for the time heist.
Really? So their suit up is they all get in the same suit and that's exciting?
It's like one of those cheesy 80s assemble the team scenes with the suit.
Yeah.
I've watched this scene multiple times. Like, I watch this as much as some people watch Avengers Assemble.
Yes.
And it's just funny because when he leans over and he's like, what is Tony say to Thor Move out of the way, Lebowski.
Oh, yeah, because it's still, yeah.
You know, it's got all the funny lines. Like, it's not your typical suit-up scene. And those suits are bad fucking ass. Like, those are actual costumes. Those aren't CGI'd on these people, unless
yes,
talking about Hulk. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a hot take, maybe, but this is, what do you think?
It's cool. It's got the multiple suits, so it fits the suit-up scene.
It's like your Mach 1s.
Yes. Right? It does. Powerful. It is, right? We like the group suit-up scene, apparently.
Yeah, we do.
It's really cool. They all put in their matching gloves.
They're matching gloves and their time devices, and like Rocket's hand isn't like adorable. The return of Thor's powers. I only saw the first Thor and then Ragnarok and Love and Thunder. I don't remember. Is this in the first Thor? Because it's been years since I've seen it. The intended sacrifice for Jane and her friends proved that he was worthy to wield Mjolnir once more, paving the way for the suit-up scene. After nearly perishing at the hands of the Destroyer, the hammer reached out to Thor, and their bonding sparked a huge electrical surge.
Well, I see Thor's got a couple, and they're kind of blended together. There's also the scene where it's like he thinks all the power is having Mjolnir, and he doesn't have Mjolnir. And so he doesn't have his power.
Yeah.
But then he like rediscovers that he's the god of thunder and he has it in him.
Yes.
And that's the scene where his eyes are glowing white with the lightning bolts. And, you know, that's, to me, that's the better suit up scene.
I agree. And that's the one I remember. Yeah. There's that one. And then there's also.
He appears and then like levels like 20 bad guys. Oh,
Ultron. Is that what you're talking about?
No. The one I'm thinking of is in Wakanda where he appears where. Thanos's army,
yes,
is going under the dome, right? And then he appears as the god of thunder and then like levels an entire army at once. And
I hope he never gives up this role. I can't see anybody playing Thor as well as, like, when we get to Secret Wars, if he's still not Thor, we have a problem.
Yeah, they're gonna bring everybody back for Secret Wars.
You think so?
I think so, in one way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got some pretty cool, like, even though it's same thing with him, the suit doesn't have anything to do with his powers. It's just kind of cool.
He doesn't pick up Mjolnir with the suit on. He picks up Mjolnir whenever he feels like it.
That's right.
Case in point, Agent Ultron, when everybody tries to pick the hammer up.
Yes.
And he's just like, flippity flip, I can handle this. Spider-Man's midair iron suit up in Doctor Strange, I believe. No, Avengers Infinity War, when he's hopping on Thanos' ship.
Oh, yeah.
And the suit
pops
out and has all the crawly things.
Yes. Yeah, but then there's also the that same, is it Endgame, where he's got the Iron Spider suit and he flips it on and it starts killing everybody?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, too.
It comes back. Goes, yeah. I think Spider-Man was always cool before. But since he's, you know, been buddy-buddy with old Stark,
yes,
his suit-up's ranked right to the top of every Marvel movie, in my humble.
Also was pretty cool in, was it 2, where he gets the new suit, and he's trying to figure it all out, like all the different things that it does.
And it's talking to him for the first time.
Who
was the voice? I can't remember who the voice was for Friday. Was it Friday that was in that suit for him?
I don't remember.
It's a very unique voice that whatever, fuck it. Next on the list, Doctor Strange's midair suit up. The midair suit up is pretty popular. Like, Stark was the one who I think coined it, because there's where he starts to fight and gets thrown around, and he, like, it's the first nano suit that like forms up his body.
Yeah, exactly.
I like a suit up with a big flash, with a big, like, a huge splash on screen. Like these midair ones. I mean, this is in Doctor Strange 2 when he's at the wedding. For you, listener,
that's right.
What happens at the wedding? Who's there? Is it, what character is that?
It's his. Is it his ex at the wedding? Why do
it's
I?
His
not
ex
remember
at,
this?
It's his ex at the wedding. He shows up, and then what goes down outside the hotel? Is it the giant alien with the big eye?
Oh yes, that's right. Right at the beginning, with America Chavez battling.
Yes,
that
that's where they meet. And what I like about his suit-up scenes isn't this one so much, but how the cloak is involved.
The cloak is the whole story. Yeah.
Exactly.
The cloak saves his ass so many times, and it's fantastic.
The cloak is carpet from Aladdin. Let's just be honest here, right?
Yeah, the cloak is it.
And so whenever cloak
is... This is a case where the suit does have a major part.
It's very true, because without the cloak, I mean, the guy'd be up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. How many times? Do you like Strange as a character? Has he ever been? Because we went to go see it together, but like I
do like Doctor Strange. I didn't as much before the movies, but I think their first Doctor Strange movie kind of won me over to Cumberbatch as him. Whatever he brought to the role was pretty cool.
Cabbage Patch, you mean?
Yeah, Cucumber Patch.
This one, I love. The first Black Panther, when he's running, and then gets on the car, and the suit morphs. Fuck.
And then he digs his claws like into the metal on the roof of the car. And
well, and this is when you learn that the suit absorbs power.
Yes.
And then he
and it starts to glow purple, with the kinetic energy or whatever, the potential energy. And
I bought this for that specific reason. I'm a huge fan of his costume.
It doesn't glow purple?
No. I know. No, it doesn't. No. It doesn't glow purple. Sorry, listener.
No, it's super cool.
The culture's in it. The claw, I don't know. I have a thing for cats, I guess.
Black Panther was a very cool movie. And the suit is pretty cool.
Well, and it's
and again, it's the coolness of the suit.
Well, and it's adjacent to Stark's suit. You've got Shuri who's helping the design of it.
Yes, and that's what was kind of cool. It was probably the first real super high tech that wasn't Stark.
Yeah,
right. And it's like, oh shit, they're even doing more than he was doing.
What else can you do with vibranium, people of Wakanda?
Exactly. Even the scene where they take Vision to Shuri and they're talking about.
Yes.
Right? And he's like, why don't you blah, 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 blah. I wish I knew what she said. And he's like, oh, that's what I thought too.
I concur, doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they did really good CGI work on this. There it is, glowing purple right there.
That's pretty cool. And as it builds more and more power, it glows brighter.
Yeah, and then he Hadoukens and releases it.
Yeah, there's that other scene too where he battles the Killmonger because they both have the suits
on.
Yeah,
when he has his gold suit on,
Yeah.
And it's like gold, purple. Yeah. I love Black Panther so much. Iron Man's first nano suit. This is when he's fighting Call Obsidian. I think this is from Infinity War.
On the street, yeah.
On the street, and all of a sudden we find out that this thing does way more than just sit on his fucking body.
Yes, the children of Thanos, they're battling them.
What's your favorite iteration of the suit? Because there's another one coming up that I think doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, I do like that one because you know how beefy the Hulkbuster suit is. But then the nano suit's pretty cool that can start doing multiple things, and there's things that fly off of it. And
when he hits his watch, and it just
and it can morph into different things. That's pretty cool.
And there's that shot where as he's walking, they're panning the camera around him, so when it comes full circle, he's already in the full suit.
Yes.
Or when he just wants to pop one boot off and then float, or blast a turbocharge and just have.
Yeah.
My God. Why can't we have nanotechnology? What else is on this list? Here it is, assembling the Hulkbuster. That was like chuk 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 chuk.
I think it's hilarious when Banner can't turn into the Hulk.
Yeah,
and then he's wearing the Hulkbuster suit.
What's the problem? Why won't you come out to play?
Yeah,
that suit. I almost bought that suit at a collector's shop in Winnipeg, like the Hulkbuster.
Oh, the Hulkbuster's pretty cool.
$200 fucking dollar statue. I want this suit to keep making an appearance. I think this should be something that they should write into the Hulk story, that he's got it still, or that it's kicking around somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Number three is Hulk's actual transformation. I don't know why they put this on this list. I disagree with this. Hulk's transformation during into the Battle of New York, where he goes from Banner to Hulk. Technically not a suit up, more along a morph. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I'm just reading what it says. He was always in a state of controlled anger before viewers saw him morph into the massive frame of the Hulk.
Like, it is the first time we get to see the new CGI of the Hulk in the Avengers. It looks fucking great, but I wouldn't call
it. Oh, and that's when he punches the giant flying Chitauri fish looking
thing. The skull. Yeah. I don't know. Morphing, not really.
Yeah, it's not.
He rips his suit. His suit is gone.
if you classify his suit as his clothes or is the Hulk his suit?
Like every time the Hulk ends up coming back to Bruce Banner, he's not wearing any clothes. So to not be able to suit up into something, like best transformation, sure. Best use of power, sure. We could argue that. But yeah. Best suit up, no. No, Screen Rant, you fucked up.
It seems like we're doing just all Marvel, clearly. I didn't see that at the beginning.
Yeah.
Marvel suit up?
Yeah, I didn't even really look down this list. I was like, we'll do what they have.
Yeah.
And, it eventually leaned very hard to the right for Marvel. So, lastly, the first time we get to see Iron Man, which I think is befitting.
The new Iron Man.
The new Iron Man.
Like, not his Mark One suit.
No, not his, what does it say here? The first official suit up for Tony was easily the biggest costume upgrade in the MCU as he created the Mach 3 to fully embrace becoming Iron Man. Tony put on the suit to take out Ten Rings organization, which is when viewers saw the suit up in all its magnificence. I don't care what anybody says. I'll watch him put that thing on time and time again.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Do you remember where, like, do you remember your first screening of Iron Man?
I don't remember where I was or the first time I watched it.
How'd you feel?
You know what? It took me a while to really get into like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it
really?
Didn't happen right away. Like, I liked it. I just didn't realize it was going to become
what it was.
Yeah. That it was going to be just like, I thought it was going to be a couple different series, and I didn't realize that it was all going to wind together like the Avengers, and then the Avengers were going to go forward into, you know,
50 years of storytelling
Infinity
brought to
War
you by
an Endgame. And I never experienced, like, I never thought the universe was coming. So I didn't get as excited about the individual things. But then when the Avengers happened, and then like Age of Ultron, and then I went back and I enjoyed the.
Then you went down a deep, dark rabbit hole on the
internet.
Yeah,
the earlier ones.
There's your list, ladies and gentlemen. What's your favorite suit up? What's your favorite costume? We have a voicemail line. This is where you, listener, get to tell us what you think about what we just talked about. If you agree, disagree, or you've got a better idea, or you don't even give a shit at all and you want to leave a voicemail about how bad your day was. Either way, it's at the link in our bio on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Up to 5 minutes for a comment. You want to talk?
I mean, you know, like the old-fashioned small-scale suit-up that was always a big deal was Clark Kent ripping open his suit to show the S on his chest, right?
In a phone booth.
Right? Whipping off the glasses and ripping open his chest.
Right. So we have, you take your shirt off and you take your glasses off, and now you're a completely different person.
Yeah, 100%.
It definitely.
So that was a pretty dramatic suit up, and those were like back in the days before Marvel and any of these big superhero movies, right?
Yeah. Batman. I mean, let's give DC some love before we move
on. See, he doesn't have like the super power suit up. His is more like, here's what money bought me, like sort of Iron Man-esque.
Trust fund baby suit.
Yes. His is all like the little things that like when a weird situation arises and he just happens to have the exact thing for it on his belt or somewhere.
Well, the old ones, like 89 through to whenever Nolan took it over, were cheesy. It was like cut shots. And it'd be like originally it was like you'd cut to the gauntlet and you'd cut to the cape and you'd cut to the boot and you'd cut to the belt, and then you'd have a full wide shot of him in suit. But then it got to the point where like, I think, I don't remember which one, it's just a Schumacher one, where like they show the crotch and the nipples. And I was like, you're really taking the fucking piss here, guys. Like, this is supposed to be cool. Not, I don't want to see his package.
Yes.
But
he was the original, like the, had everything on his suit.
Well, yeah,
not so much just suit up, but I mean, like, come on, you take the old TV series.
Shark
like,
repellent?
Dude had shark repellent. I mean, you got to have something for every situation.
You know what?
Right?
You're totally right. Yeah, because and they went fucking hard on that every time something was in that fucking bat belt.
And it wasn't like something that could be used for multiple purposes. It was very specific.
Oh, yeah. Like a bat parking pass. Or a bat radar or some dumb shit.
Yes, or like some sort of antidote for a very specific thing that happened.
Oh, you're poisoned with this? I just so happen to have it in my belt.
Exactly.
Batman, Aquaman, like they don't really get any suit. Like Aquaman's walking around with his shirt off and then he's in a suit.
Yes.
Right? Wonder Woman, we don't see her change for obvious reasons. Cyborg.
He is a suit.
He is a suit, right? Like, DC doesn't really focus on this as much as Marvel does.
No.
Maybe that's why this whole list is fucking Marvel.
Maybe. Maybe they are the suit-up thing.
Yeah. Well, they're the suit-up thing. They're the, what's the word? Not Inception. origin story.
Origin story thing.
Yeah. Right. They don't do that. They try to do that in DC, but it just doesn't pan out. But there's like, these are the shots that make up the Marvel.
I think
Marvel
of all of those, my favorite is that Thor, where his eyes are glowing white.
I agree.
God of Thunder, where he realizes he doesn't need anything to be powerful.
Yeah, it looks fucking amazing. Like when he breaks bad and then and they continue to do that shot, you know, yeah. And he's like supercharged. Yeah, no, I like it because it's all Thor. Anyways, all right, move on. You want to talk about death?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let me bring a made list here. This one's all on me.
On-screen death.
On-screen death. Okay.
I think your angle was originally like most disturbing on-screen deaths.
It was. It started off that way, and like any good painting,
and I guess disturbing
it
doesn't necessarily. Disturbing could be graphic. Disturbing could be mysterious.
How you're disturbed.
Disturbing
is,
could
yeah.
be unexpected. Which made you disturbed?
Yeah. Like, I guess I was asking what disturbs you, but then I was like, that's too pigeonholed. Let's just talk about death. Like, first of all, the mechanic of a death of a character. Like, has there ever been a show or a TV show where you were throwing your shoe being like, what the fuck?
Well, we know. We talked about
it. Very true.
Right. Game of Thrones broke the mold for that, where before that, you weren't allowed to introduce a major character. Like, there's not a single person that didn't read the books or anything that didn't think Ned Stark was going to be the main character of the show.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
They all knew. They
exactly.
all knew.
Totally. And then they continue to do it. Like you worried on that show every time you started liking a character. Like, I don't want my favorite character to get killed.
Yes.
And unlike other shows where you always know, regardless of the situation that the character main character gets into, they're going to find a way out because you're not going to kill off the main character.
You're going to get too much bad feedback.
Game of Thrones literally said nobody's safe. And when you know nobody's... Like, there's been movies, like individual standalone movies, but anything that sort of like introduced you to a main character and you knew that they were like they're not going to kill Batman in a
no.
Batman movie.
No.
Right?
Unless it's the last Batman movie ever.
So
to be
no
made.
Matter what the situation is where Batman looks like he's suspended from, you know, a rope that's burning through on top of a vat of acid with razor blades and blah, blah, you know he's going to get out of it.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to kill Batman. But Game of Thrones, every situation, you didn't know if the person was going to die. And it legitimately made you feel uncomfortable.
It did. And that stopped being... You know, a part of a story and started being a mechanic, a use for the show. And it had us tune in each week and it had us on edge and it brought the whole story off the screen into like, is this the day that yeah. Rob gets it? Is this Red Wedding?
Yeah, exactly. Right? And then people you thought like the entire series, did you think Tyrion was going to get it? Like people are always, oh, he's going to die now. No, he's not. Oh, he's not dead.
Yeah.
Is he going to get it now? No, he survived now, you know? So the escaping death was also interesting, like, you know.
Yeah. As escaping death not just for the sake of ending a character storyline, but for, like you said earlier, continuing the storyline. If that death is epic enough, Ned's death carried on, right?
Exactly.
The Red Wedding carried on.
Occasionally characters die and then come back.
Right? Like, I know there was a stupid theory about Lady Stark coming back because...
In the book, she came back,
yes,
right?
Okay, that's...
As part of the group. The
Men Without Banners.
Yeah,
didn't
right?
Run by her and then the fire
yes,
priest.
Yes, so she's resurrected by them and she actually plays another character in the books, apparently, that's...
Holy shit.
Retribution and stuff like that. I mean, but, like, Jon Snow... Right, you yeah. know, like who would have thought that there's a.
I was like, okay, you're here again. He's
revive
dead.
From the death,
yeah.
And just as much as Ned Stark's death, like shocked the shit out of me. This is the first time that they actually like, oh, he's dead, and then they fucking bring him back, and you're like, you didn't expect somebody being able to be brought back from the dead
after seeing every major character in a storyline,
yeah.
die. They're not isolated characters like Pedro Pascal's character from.
Oh, Martell.
Martell's.
Oberon Martell.
Right, like talk about graphic. Watching someone, he was quoted recently saying, "I was asleep that whole scene. It was fucking hot that day, and they put it all over top of me so that you know that I could just lie there."
Yeah.
And he says, "He was a gentleman. He squeezed my head and made it pop, and everything was great." But watching that. All bets are off. It doesn't matter who. So then when you get a character to do the opposite and come back from death, now you're just fucking with me even more, Mr. Martin.
Yeah, he was really, he broke some, I think broke some ground when it comes to on screen.
Well, literary even.
Death.
Right? Like, because his book
I
before,
guess in the books, yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, he's book before his show. So in fantasy, in any story, your main character survives, right? Because yeah. It's who we identify with. It's who you put a lot of your stock in.
Or.
Hear me out now.
Hear me out. Different perspective. Same thing. Did he just make us think that characters were the main character when really they weren't?
Oh, deep dive.
Like, did we just spend the entire show trying to guess who the main character was?
And we put that on them
yes,
ourselves.
Yes, we put it on different people, but he was just showing us an offshoot character that wasn't the main character. So what he actually uncovers during the show is who really is the main character.
I want to go back and watch it now and be like, how fucking tricked was I?
Right, because how many times does he make you think that that person is going to be a main character going on?
Yeah.
And then when Joffrey gets killed, you're like, fucking cheer. You've never cheered so much for a child being killed.
Okay, great point. Watching a character comeuppance, right? Watching someone get it. Did I put an example of that on here? Let me go to the list. When you get to see somebody like Joffrey eat it, it's a release. It's a death that you want. It's not a, like, most times
oh,
you're
God,
like,
you can be so happy for a child dying.
Did I get an example of this? Oh, I did. Here's the example I pulled from this. You remember The Departed, right?
I remember seeing it. I don't remember what death you're talking about, though.
Okay, so there's two deaths. There's DiCaprio's death in the elevator when they're in the elevator going to the top of the, like, basically at the end, and he shoots him.
Yes.
And that's the other undercover cop that Nicholson had in the
yes.
Force. So there's that death.
Yes.
Pretty fucking shocking. And you're like, Matt Damon's such a fucking Boston prick. But then when he ends up in the end of the movie and Wahlberg is in his apartment after he comes home from grocery shopping.
Oh, I don't remember that.
So Wahlberg knew it was him the entire time. And Wahlberg's in like a full suit so that none of his DNA can be found. And he's just standing there and he goes, okay, hear me out. And Wahlberg doesn't even listen and he just pumps two in his fucking head and then walks out the door. That kind of death, I absolutely fucking love. Because it's release
yes.
from tension after watching an asshole perform for 2 hours.
Wow, death is such a...
It's such a... You don't think about it that much in what you watch, but it's a major part of how you're telling a story and what it does to the ripple effect, I guess.
Yes. And quite often, the classic formula was, like, good versus evil.
Yep.
Evil ends up dying, good prevails.
You're trying to reflect that in
right?
life, yeah.
And then they throw some twists in there where good versus evil and evil wins once in a while and good dies. But then when they start playing around with different ways of introducing death, you know, characters, auxiliary characters dying off, somebody's kids, somebody's parents, somebody's...
Prime example, Charlie from Lost.
You know?
Right? Like, major character, but not really... Like, did you watch Lost?
Well, no.
No, okay. Go
but
on.
I was just going to say, realistically, they use it as, even though we don't show, like, Game of Thrones showed us the deaths that were going to become important in the show. Quite often, we're introduced to characters as orphans, right? Superman came to Earth because his parents in Krypton were blown up.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker was raised by his uncle in the desert because, you know, it, like, we get introduced. Batman is because
parents
his
shot.
Parents are, you know, you get introduced. There's a lot of orphans doing things, right?
Yeah.
So death plays a part in their story, but very rarely do we get introduced to characters and actually see that death, you know, become important and see that death, and then the character
part of their
spawns
arc.
From that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They go back quite often.
It's
like
a starting
Batman.
Point, but
yeah.
it's not.
Yeah, so I think that death is definitely a huge plot, you know, plot, not a device, really, that's used so much to forward the plot, but it's used as a story of where somebody came from, and usually death is involved.
Their cornerstone.
Death of a loved one. Spider-Man, Uncle Ben. You know, like, almost every hero, like,
with
that
great
type,
death comes great responsibility.
Right? Somebody in their life died.
Yeah.
Nobody came from a happy home.
Well, and it's also a great way to sympathize with a character, right? Like, you're on, like, I had a grandparent who died. Okay, this character's parents have died.
Yes.
Batman's parents are dead. Well, my parents are dead. Okay, I can emote a lot easier. Has there ever been a death that made you fucking bawl like a baby that you want to admit about? Because I cry when characters die. Like, my heart fucking breaks.
You know what? This is going to be the stupidest.
Nothing stupid in this room, sir.
Stupidest on-screen death you can imagine.
Okay.
But I remember as a kid being in the Kings movie theater on Portage Avenue.
Shout out Kings.
It's now like a Royal Sports
No,
store.
It's a Mexican.
Oh, it's now, yeah, Mexican grocery or
yeah,
something?
Yeah.
Latin American grocery.
Yeah. Mercadito or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
So I remember being in that theater watching the movie Batteries Not Included.
Oh, Hume Cronin.
Right?
Oh.
And the little tiny.
Don't do it. The little tiny spaceship.
And then he doesn't make it. And the guy says, "Batteries not included."
Oh.
And I'm like, I was bawling. Like, I remember that being the first, like, I'm almost crying right now thinking about it.
Oh, my.
That, to me, was an on-screen, the first real on-screen death that, like, really hit
crushed
me.
You.
Yeah.
That's such a good movie. I'm so glad you, like, Steven Spielberg, too.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that. But, like, Hume Cronin, Jennifer, not Tilly, what's her name? Both of them acted forever.
Oh, God.
Not Tilly. Tally.
I'll bring it up.
Vamp.
But, you know, that was just something. And it was weird that it was like a non-living creature that made me upset and
yeah.
cry.
You have nothing in common with an alien spaceship.
Yeah, but there was just something about the innocence and the way that they had, and I don't know the actor's character, that played the caretaker.
Oh, the big black guy?
Yeah.
Frank McRae.
Okay. And just the way that he said so few lines, and then he says that, and it was so impactful. And
he's a Kevin Smith.
Yes.
It's Jessica Tandy that I'm thinking of.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, that was a huge death scene that meant a lot to me. I don't know. And it wasn't even a huge plot point, but made me care about a character.
That's all that. It, you know, like I mentioned earlier with Charlie, like pivotal to the plot and Lost, but such a sacrificial, like I bawled when Charlie died because yeah. in the scene, he finds out that somebody else on the island, their girlfriend is in touch with the island and he's trapped in a room underneath, like he's trapped in this mechanical room way down deep at the bottom of the ocean. And he's realizes death's about to hit and this, the Lost song kicks in and it's just him floating in the water and you're like, oh God, here we go. And he writes on his hand, not the name of the girl that they think it is. And he just pops it up and then the hand slowly drops down and then like he floats off and dies. And like you watch the whole thing happen and it's such a sacrificial death. Well, at the same time, not really pivotal to the whole fucking story, but I don't know. Charlie had me. I used to put tape on my hands like Charlie.
Oh.
Paint my nails like Charlie.
See, another one that's very similar to that is Opie's death on Sons of Anarchy.
I was hoping we wouldn't go there. I really was. Watching a scene where friends are watching another person be bludgeoned to death.
And can't do anything?
I can't imagine what Jax would have felt like in
right?
that scenario. And then having
so
to pick
talk
him.
About, like, that's a big TV death for sure.
I think the whole town went dark that night after they killed Opie because, like, every woman watching the show was like, fucking handsome motherfucker.
Yeah.
Every dude was like, I want to be that handsome motherfucker. And then Jax was like, the cops, like, pick. You pick who dies.
And the way that he sort of sacrificed himself for Jax and...
Man, Opie.
That was a big one.
That was a huge one. I think I watched that episode like four or five times since.
Yeah.
Like, just to get rocked. Like, I like that rocked feeling.
And that's so that's a thing like I see going through this list. There's like the mid show death.
Yes.
You know, that then really turns the plot and something happens that they use. There's the like finale death.
To where, cap a season, yeah.
Yeah, to cap a season or to finish the movie.
Or a cliffhanger.
Right. Yes, exactly. Who
Did
killed
they die?
JR?
Yeah.
Are they dead?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you not know?
Who killed JR was spoofed on the fucking Simpsons, right?
Exactly.
Baby Maggie.
So there's the where you place the death, you know, is it Bambi where you open with Bambi?
Why are you fucking with me today?
I'm just saying there's different places to use death, right? And Bambi's mom, I mean, you didn't even know, like, that's an instance where you feel for him.
Yes.
Right?
That's sort of the Batman thing. You don't like care about his parents that they died. So it's just like you care about the character and they had that traumatic experience. So you feel it through their eyes. Then Opie and that type of thing is like you start caring so much about the character and then you're the one experiencing it first.
Yes.
Right? So like that's if Opie a different died way to use death.
If Opie died in the first two episodes, I probably wouldn't have been as attached as now I've. And they know, they go.
Do we care that Jax's father's dead?
No.
No.
No. No, it's his cornerstone, but we don't give a fuck about Jax.
The entire movie's about the fact that he's dead and he left this.
He narrates some of the fucking show. Yeah. Like, it's no, you're with the Bambi thing, that was such a ballsy move to do that, too. Because you're starting a animated child's movie about one of the biggest conversations that parents don't want to have with their kids.
Man, and some fucking, those are the ones that get you.
Yeah.
Up.
Never saw it.
Come on.
Never saw it. I know. We're playing that game right now.
Like, literally, that's a movie. In the first 5 minutes, you fucking laugh, and then you're fucking bawling, and then the movie starts.
Cold open.
Like, they literally, they make you care so much. Like, they basically establish this character from, like, youth to the old crotchety man and why he is how he is in, like, the first 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, it's one of those.
Right?
Like a Wall-E kind of thing where like it's fast track.
It's this like little vignette of his life and he meets his wife and they fall in love and all the things that they do and then she dies. And this is all in the first 5 minutes and you're fucking bawling. And then the show basically starts.
And then there's a fucking punched up joke.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how they use death.
Ed Asner played the old man, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, he looks a whole lot like Ed Asner.
I think that was an on purpose.
But that was, right? That's a way that death's getting used differently there again. Like it's to kind of like focus you in.
Well, yeah, it centers, you know where the story's going, right?
Yeah.
You get an idea where it's not just a...
And it also gives you a little bit of the feeling that the character has that you're about to watch. So it puts you in that frame of mind that the character you're watching.
That's so powerful.
Right? Very rarely do shows do that, where kind of like, that's the way they're going to establish it. So now going forward, you're feeling a little bit of that loss that he has. And right now, then you understand why he maybe does the things he does and the way that he acts.
Yeah, man. I love your brain. That's all I'm going to say. How about dumb death? My example of dumb death on this list? Not dumb plot hole death. Let's go back. Let's rephrase
that.
You
don't watch TikTok anymore, but that's like a song now on dumb death? TikToks. There's a clip for a song that's dumb ways to die. And it keeps showing. Anyways.
Plot hole death. Death where you're like... Hang on here. And I think we all know this. The man just did a documentary series about proving if it could or could not have happened because who doesn't have enough money? James fucking Cameron. Titanic.
The
sacrificial death.
Unnecessary death.
Yeah. The nut. Like, we saw how big that fucking plank was, guys. Like, you screwed up in construction when you made it big enough for two, but you left them in the water.
There was plenty of room. I think people have done the physics on it, and I think...
That's what the documentary was on!
There's more than enough flotation.
They may have not survived the cold water.
Yes.
But the floating out of the water would have maybe prevented. And
there's enough buoyancy on that door to hold both of them up.
And that's where you get knocked right out of the fucking story.
Yeah.
Because if you're in construction or in shipbuilding, then you're like, I know, that's not proper. And then you go, oh, all right.
And is there other movies like that? Can you think of some other dumb deaths?
Not so much like, well, hang on, what did I put on here?
The unnecessary death. There's a good topic for you, Mike.
The unnecessary... Logan needed to die.
You knew Logan was going to... Logan was going to die.
Okay, let's go through the... Let's do this list here because we're closing it on the end here.
So I
pulled from the top 100 deaths. Useless death. Hang on. Here we go. You brought it up. I would have liked to have seen Thelma and Louise go off and live their life. I would... Because they're outrunning the fucking asshole who's trying to... The domestic abusing husband,
right? Do you need to die? Like, why are you dying?
You're living your best life.
Why not ride off into the sunset?
Right?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sure they shot that, but then to jump off the edge of a cliff, first of all, I can't remember who Thelma and Louise are. I just know it's Gina and Susan, but, like, one of them is Susan's Thelma. No. Yeah. No. Gina's Thelma. Susan is Louise. Louise is, like, trying to tell her to get her life in order and, like, take her out of the situation to then drive off a cliff in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
Useless death.
Yeah.
Not needed. She goes off. like a chick song. They go off and open up a roadside stand. They sell ham and fruit, and then they live as domestic partners for the rest of their lives, and it's fucking fantastic. Yeah, and Brad Pitt comes over for booty calls on the weekend.
Like, usually when that type of ending happens, it's the going out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
And that's the Bonnie and Clyde type situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Scarface.
Right? The sort of you
say hello to my little friend.
The Breaking Bad. The character that you love, you hate, you love to hate, you know they've got to go out in the blaze of glory.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right? That's the only way they can go.
Yeah, and it better to burn out than to fade away, Neil Young.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. So. But Thelma and Louise don't fit that.
It's a comedy.
But maybe that's why we remember Thelma and Louise.
We do, but we...
If it was just a feel-good buddy comedy slash...
Sure, yeah. If it was like Step Brothers and they all, yeah. You know, they all did well. See, I started with a tearjerker. Do you remember The Notebook?
Vaguely, yes.
It's the hand-holding scene in the end of the movie when the line is, I'll be seeing you. And it's those one crushing lines that if you can fit five words in that just melt your heart, and then they wake up the morning after, they're holding hands in bed, and they've passed away. That's a good death. That's a good romantic death where both people go off together.
We just talked about it in The Last of Us.
Right? Which death are we talking about?
Offerman and...
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. Like holding hands. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There it is. It
dying together.
He goes and takes the poison.
And when oh my God! I'm getting shivers. It's nuts. When he comes back in with the wine, yeah. I knew as soon as he, because when he left to do it and he came back in, and was his body language was like, if we're going, we're going together.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And that's death, not as sadness. That's death showing us like, true love.
Happiness.
Right?
Yeah.
So there you're using death not as, like, death is actually...
It's not dark.
Yeah, it's not dark. It's actually to show that love was real.
It's peaceful.
Exactly.
It's off to the next life together.
Now we're discovering you can use death in multiple different ways.
Right.
It can make you sad. It can make you enraged. It can make you happy.
I love death. I love death. Then I've got Titanic. I'll never let you go, Jack. I'll never let you go.
And she let him go.
She let him go.
She let him freeze to death.
Yeah, you fucking mean person. Then you've got the... How would you call the Braveheart death? Freedom! Freedom! Is that the sacrificial death?
That's the sort of one that you to motivate others kind
yeah.
of thing, right? That's the going out in a blaze of glory for a cause.
Yeah. I thought the way to motivate other people was just to pull your kilt up and moon them.
That also works.
Yeah.
Or being the one leading the charge
yes.
in the battle.
Yeah. Yes. My favorite line in that movie is the good Lord says he can get me out of this mess, but he says you're fucked. That's my island. This to me was a funny death because we know.
The guy that couldn't die.
The guy that couldn't die. That's a good, like, you know, when they say like a Roman death, like I want a good death on the battlefield.
Yeah.
That's what this is. That's the one thing that he couldn't do. And how many times over did we see him almost die in Origins?
Yes.
Right? Vietnam War, World War II. World War II and Wolverine 2 when he like survives a nuclear blast.
Yep.
A guy who's tired. He's at the end of his fucking line. He can't even get his claws up anymore. He needs Viagra for those claws, which you see in the first sequence of the fucking movie. But that I love that death in the end. And it's...
And is it somehow...
Cathartic?
You're happy that he can die?
Yes.
Like somebody who death wasn't a possibility. Like Deadpool plays off of it where he's trying to die because he's lost his love and he can't die.
Yeah.
Right? That's using death as, you know, in another way.
You can grow baby legs.
But that's what this way you're kind of happy. You're like, oh no, he actually gets to die.
Yeah. And that's how you write a good character is that when you care about their death in whatever regard as anything but useless.
Yeah, 100%. And well, like, I never realized death was used in so many ways in movies.
Neither did I until we started talking.
Yeah.
Look at that.
This is all happening live here.
No shit. We're pulling the yarn for you kids. Star Wars, Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Just better to fade away than... And this is the apprentice and the student. This is that relationship that he became who he was because of Yoda. And to lose your master, to lose your true north, to lose your compass, your Sherpa, whatever the fuck you want to say, that's the death of a friend. That's the death of an accomplice. That's the death of someone who's like-minded.
Was Yoda ever really there?
Oh, now you're getting far. There I was.
Yes.
You were not.
And that's one, again, that helps motivate the character.
Drives the character. And then he becomes a Force ghost and nobody really dies.
Yeah, you're not so sad about his death. It serves a purpose.
Well, that the death of a Jedi is part of the belief system.
Yes, the honorable death thing.
Not so much honorable, but you've reached like Jedi level 20.
There you go. Yeah. You know, exactly.
You're all midichlorians.
You've gone clear.
You've got
right? Tom.
Tom, you're everywhere these days.
The Lion King. Oh, geez.
Father, son, parent, child, right? Very similar to Bambi, which was like 25, 30 years after Bambi, right? Because this was mid-90s. Bambi was 70s, late 60s, 70s, I think.
Oh, yeah, it was quite a while. These cartoons, I tell you, they get you.
Why is that? Why?
I think you have another one up there, too.
I do.
Land Before Time.
Yeah. No, we'll get to that one and cry together shortly, but... Why is it that an animated death is as moving as a feature death, a real death?
I don't know.
Because they don't have all of the accoutrement, right? You don't have the blood. You don't have the last dying breath. Like, Mufasa just tussles with a couple hyenas and then slowly fades out. But it's as sad as Logan. It's as sad as Yoda.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not real. I don't know.
And it's usually
is it Elton John?
The father dying or the mother dying.
Well, it's the Batman.
Yeah.
Right?
But you're actually seeing it. You're seeing the interaction, the last dying breath. It's usually, you know.
Well, it's the most relatable death because we've all lost a parent or a grandparent, right?
Yes.
Not all of us have lost a friend or a Jedi Master. You know, like it's kind of.
Yes.
It's more tolerable. I did. I mean, Lion King, you know. Aside from the fact that I was like, why are two...
And again, necessary for the plot.
Very much so, because he can't be the king.
He can't be the king as long as his father's alive. This, it establishes Scar as the
antagonist.
Big bad, and that he's willing to do anything.
Yep.
You're going to kill his own brother to get ahead. You know, it really lays the groundwork for what's going to happen next.
Death is a political motivator instead of...
Yes, right?
For death's sake.
Exactly. Very A2 Brute kind of...
Pardon me?
Julius Caesar being killed by Brutus.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You know, by your trusted companion kind of thing.
Yeah, but which one did the deed?
Yes.
Which knife stroke was the one that killed Brutus? That's the age-old question. We have our departed moment talked about.
Moment, yeah.
I love a good animal death when animals, because we're the most dangerous mammal on the planet, right?
We like to think it.
Well, yeah. But like in regards to like climate change and hunting.
We're the hardest to hunt, apparently.
Yeah. We have four wheels where they have 2 feet, four some cases. But I picked Clever Girl from Jurassic Park when Robert Muldoon looks over and he's like, Clever Girl. And then it's just a tussle in the woods. That I wish. I mean, it's Spielberg. It's the 90s. You can't do much if you want to stay PG. But I really wished that scene would have had a little bit more teeth to it, so to speak.
Yes.
Just watch an arm get flown out or something. Any animal death. I mean, I saw Cocaine Bear last week. I loved watching that bear kill people, right? Like but an animal killing a human is always funny. I mean,
it can be, yeah.
The Edge with Alec Baldwin and
never watched
Anthony Hopkins.
I know the
the big Bart the Bear.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I'm always rooting for the animal. I don't know.
The Revenant?
Oh my God. That bear, holy, like I think that's the moment in my life when I started to get affected by those kinds of scenes. Because prior to that, I can watch that stuff and be like, meh, movie magic. That one looked real, right?
Yeah.
And nobody was cheering for the bear in that scene.
No.
Fucking getting your back ripped open and chewed apart. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
So first of all.
Do we even know what's a death?
What we're talking about here, kids, is what's in the box from Seven. What's in the box? What's in the box? That's my horrible Brad Pitt. First of all, question to you. What do you think's in the box? Do you think it's her head?
I've always just assumed it was her head.
Or do you think it's the unborn baby?
Oh.
Because that changes things when you think that way. It also changes the aspect of the death. You have an adult who was killed that he didn't know was pregnant, but... Is it number three? Is it the head and the baby?
Oh. right? Is it none of the above? Is it something else?
Yeah. Is it Schrodinger's cat?
You don't know till it's not dead till you open the box.
Right? And is it dead if the box isn't opened? Fucking dilemma. No, this one.
What happens if they did a continuation and then the box wasn't something that we think it is, that she wasn't dead?
Can I ask you if the sequel
did we know that she's dead, or we just assume that she's dead?
We see a tuft
of
hair.
Do you confirm? Yeah.
A slight tuft of hair and a little bit of blood. Like, enough that there is confirmation, and then what's the only thing holding Brad Pitt from breaking is his wife. Yeah. So you assume, but this is like your death you were talking about earlier, death off screen. Death not seen, death assumed.
Yes.
And as disturbing as watching someone get beheaded like Ned Stark.
Yes, the psychological. Sometimes our own imaginations are...
they're the worst.
You don't want to provide the answer to us. You just want to make us think about what could have happened, and we're our own worst enemies.
Yeah. And I mean, like, as a person who has, you know, high anxiety, when you do this to me, I'm just like, what happened? What happened? What happened? And I'm just like contemplating for days. But yeah, no, a good death, an end of the movie death that caps it all off, ties it in a nice little bow, and really changes the pace of the movie, right? Because you think that this is all going to come to an end, and then it goes into hyperdrive 10 minutes before it's done. Good old David Fincher. Funny death.
Hans Gruber falling off Nakatomi Tower.
Well, okay, funny in the regard that what happened on set was they said, we'll drop you on 3, and they dropped him on 2.
Oh.
So this is a true reaction to being dropped off of like a 10-foot tower. So you get some real sheer fear out of Alan Rickman, where we all just assume that that's, you know, him acting.
No, that is good, yeah.
It's a great death. It's a revenge death.
Yeah.
It's a comeuppance death.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a cheesy
death. It's a finale death. That's one of your good triumphs over evil.
And
The Land Before Time.
Listener, I know I said I didn't see Up, but if you haven't seen The Land Before Time, you have a little heart.
Mom.
And the line, let your heart guide you.
I know.
On an adventure with a little triceratops and a pterodactyl. Also, the animation in that movie was fucking fantastic. Like, not being a Disney film.
I haven't gone back and watched it, but I know it was... I mean, it's spun... There's been, like...
There's 20 of them.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a whole lot of... like, straight-to-video releases, but there's a whole lot of them.
There's so many Land Before Times, I think a dinosaur actually exists.
Yes.
How about this one?
Oh, yes. Schindler's List.
And the death we're talking about, there's lots. Let's not get into them all. But the death we're talking about isn't one that you see again, but one that is so fucking impactful. It's the little girl in red.
The only color in the movie.
The only color in the movie. So that it jumps out at you. So it's tactile, right? Because you can, not tactile, but like it's visual, right?
Yeah.
It's straight in your face. But you only see her twice. You see her running when they pull up on the town.
Yeah.
And that you see the heartbreak in Schindler's eyes with his date, whoever the woman was. But then you don't see her again till the end, and you realize that, like, no one's safe.
Yeah.
And children are just...
That's a very symbolic death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Because she symbolized innocence and...
A loss of, yeah.
Right.
Oh, God, I never even thought of it like that. I just thought that there was they had no regard for anything, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, children could still be salvaged maybe in their eyes for working in some factory or something, right? Been watching a lot of German World War II documentaries. Ever since I saw...
Positive.
Well, no, I watched...
Good.
Yeah, maybe that's why I'm feeling like shit these days. No, I watched All Quiet on the Western Front, and then it started to make me be like, well, what else from the German perspective do we not know?
Oh.
Because that...
Oh, no, you're watching it from the German perspective.
I'm not watching... Hang on. Let me rephrase
that. We made great
that.
Advances.
The technology, I tell you. No, what I've just been watching is the history of it, because this was from the boys going off to war's perspective and being lied to. That's what the movie
on
the Western Front's about. The stuff I'm watching is on Tubi, so I can tell you, that tells you how much it's accurate. But yeah, no, it just, fuck. I remember seeing, and like, I watched this in school.
Yeah, I don't remember where I watched it, but it was something that was, you know,
related to like
dramatic,
education.
Yeah. And it is very symbolic in that sense.
I had
I viewed it as symbolic.
I did, yeah. I didn't know the...
You didn't know the girl. You don't get introduced to her. She doesn't mean anything to you. But yet, she does. She symbolizes youth and innocence and, you know, hope.
Yeah, the
and
next generation
that
is...
That dies,
yeah.
too.
Well, Spielberg, you are the GOAT. Then we have a brother's death. A younger brother's death from American History X. The X. Doing that lately. Life's too short to be pissed off all the time. When you... Do you remember American History that well?
I don't remember this death.
Okay, so...
If you would have said the death from American History X, I would have thought of the curb stomping.
Sure. Yeah, you know what? You know what? And that's... I just didn't want to trigger a listener, but, like, that's the one that we all go to.
Yeah.
Which, like, I still... I look away this day. It's just not... Easy yeah. to watch a curb, like a true curb. And like, you'd heard curb stomping before?
Yeah.
That was the first and I think only time it's ever been put on screen.
The only time I've seen it for sure.
This is the death I'm talking about though, is that when he finally gets his brother to pull away from the racism.
Ah, yes.
And he ends up running into the black guy in the washroom who yeah. realizes he's a skinhead, doesn't give him 2 seconds to think about it and blows him away. And it's like, it's the character's turn to good and the lights are pulled out. Or the lights
yes.
are turned off.
And I mean, we've whitewashed this one here, but you see it in lots of movies where he pulled away from the gang life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know?
Or like where, on the cusp of going in
exactly,
and trying
to get right?
out.
Even like American
Boys
Me,
in the Hood.
Right? Is it Blood In, Blood Out?
Blood In, Blood Out.
Right?
Ah, oh, good.
You know,
good
like
pull.
That kind of stuff, right?
Oh.
You know, just when you're getting away from it that you can't escape it. And, you know, the character has made, you know, a breakthrough, but they still perish.
Yeah, death. You know? Death follows.
Yes.
Right? I'm surprised we didn't pick any of the deaths from like Final Destination. I'm really
oh,
unimpressed
God.
With myself. Those are funny
that,
deaths.
Yes, that's yeah. when death needs to win.
Yeah, or like Saw, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Those. I think that's what I meant when I said disturbing.
Yeah, but yet those deaths aren't as important. I
no.
think we're going into like the death as a plot device.
Exactly. Whereas death for, you know, gore porn's sake.
Yeah.
I can watch someone get chopped up any day, but can you make the death count?
Yes.
Can you hit a 3-point shot from half court?
The death of Obi-Wan.
The death of Obi-Wan, again, behind the scenes, nobody knew.
Yeah.
So when they all saw this on paper, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And it worked so well.
But again, you know, they don't really die, so.
Exactly. Well, we didn't know they didn't die until Return, okay? Actually, halfway through Empire, you find out that, you know, Midichlorians are this thing. But nonetheless, like, good versus evil. Your prime example of
yes.
good versus evil on screen. And also... didn't it just made him disappear? That's the only thing about this death
yeah,
that's
it was
questionable.
A strange death.
Yeah.
Like, did he die or did he just?
Well, you see the dude's hand get chopped off in the opening scene in New Hope when they're in the bar, and the bar fight breaks out. So we know that it can chop a hand off and leave you bloody, but if it goes after your head or your neck specifically, you disappear into a force ghost.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's how they kept the PG rating.
Ah, disappeared. Yeah.
Oh, here's the funny death. I shot Marvin in the face from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yes.
The conversation.
The accidental death in the car.
Which is like, it is into the plot. Like, it carries them all the way through to the end of the movie when they got to go to the buddy's house and get, you know, they have coffee and they got to clean the car. It's not needed, but it sure as fuck wanted after you see it.
Yes.
And just the quick, it's the quick one.
And the black comedy that ensues from there. Establishing their characters.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. And we're coming in on the end of
this
list
is just
here,
memorable deaths, the melting Nazis from Raiders.
Such bad special effects of
yes.
the time. We know.
We all remember it, though.
We do.
Yeah.
It goes down in your mind that you opening up the Ark. I wonder, I believe that if you found the Ark and opened it, this might happen.
It might. But you're kind of happy it happens to Nazis.
You're very happy it happens
yeah.
to Nazis. Those technologically addicted fucks.
This next one, I tell you, The Shining. What a stupid death.
It's a waste of a death. It's a cut-to scene.
Yet another thing I don't like about The Shining.
We're building that list for Chrissy to come over to talk
I
about.
I just don't. I never care about him.
I don't
care about him.
So you don't care about the death.
We've all been talking about death. You need to care about a person for death to mean something.
Yeah.
I don't care about him.
Had they given his character some semblance of emotion, something outside of alcoholism or like being not a great father, something that grounded him in being a human.
Yes.
I would have given a shit about
But you even want, like, to establish his son, like, the loss of his father to mental illness or whatever it is, then I would care about it from the eyes of, is John, Jonathan, is his son? Jack and,
Jack. No.
What the fuck?
Jack Torrance is the
Jack
father.
Torrance's dad, yeah.
I'm going to blank on whatever. But the kid, I mean, like Dr. Sleep, right? The story of the kid. I
hate that I don't know this.
I just don't. I never cared about him. And that's my big. It's my big issue with The Shining, because you're supposed to care of his descent into madness.
You want
to
know the name?
Yeah, what is it?
It's Danny.
Danny Torrance, yes. But you don't care. So then you don't care his descent, and you don't really care about him as a person. And,
no.
And through that, you don't really care about the kid as much, because you don't see him love his father and care about his father, and his father is gone to him. And it's just, it lost emotion to me. So when you see him, it just seems like a parody of a
good
movie.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
This scene where his eyes are rolled back frozen.
I don't like this because I think a more befitting life would have been madness in the hotel.
Yeah.
I think like the whole movie is about him seeing people in the hotel and then he dies. He's escaping insanity. Right. And then you see the clip at the end when they pull up on the picture and it's him in the photo. And you're like, has he always been there or is he there now?
Yeah.
I would have liked some sort of like confirmation that Jack is destined to walk around the hotel for the rest of his days and just be fucked up constantly all the time. To kill him is weird because he goes after wife and son, comes after them with an axe. Like it all happens so fast. It's also useless where the madness should have been like they escape. And he's stuck.
Yeah. Well, you
better
know,
than death is a life of madness.
There's some, I think we talked about this before, the theory where, like, he's not dead from the last scene that we see from chasing them through the maze and being exposed to the elements and dying outside. He's actually dead from earlier, and that's, it's her memory, and she's...
I never got that the first time. Oh.
Oh, there's this other whole story that the movie's actually through her eyes and she's the one that's gone crazy and she's responsible for his death. And in her mind, it's him going crazy trying to kill her.
What Reddit feed do you find this on, sir?
There's this whole thing and they people have picked out scenes where it's through her eyes and it's reality and how it changes through her eyes. Placement of furniture and different things. There's this whole like rabbit hole. I can't remember her characters, but the whole thing through
Wendy.
Her eyes. Yes.
That one I got. Point,
yeah.
Point us. What about room 237, 240? Have you seen it? Room 247?
No, I haven't. No.
You know about it?
Well, that's the room in the movie.
Yeah. So it's a documentary.
Yes.
About what he was trying to talk about.
Is that from Kubrick's point of view?
No. It's from multiple people's point of view. One of them thinks he's talking about the demise of the American Indian.
Okay.
The entire subtext of the film. If you watch camera angles and watch what he's paying attention to in certain rooms, it's that. And there's like four or five people who are all like trying to impose this deeper idea into the story of The Shining than should he. Like, it doesn't have the business being there. It's interesting. It's not great, but
I think people give Kubrick too much credit that he was this
auteur.
You know, exactly, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know, this deep and this was so symbolic and stuff. I think he just made a really shitty horror movie. And sometimes he hides under the guise of being so smart when really you're not. Like,
yeah, like he made, you know, Dr. Strangelove and he made Full Metal Jacket. Like all of these talked about pieces that no one wants to give him shit for The Shining. And it's like, no, he's long dead. We can give him shit. We can talk about the dead in bad ways.
Frozen Jack.
Frozen. That should be a cocktail.
The Frozen Jack.
The Frozen Jack.
Jackery.
And that would be the end of the list, Mark.
Oh, there we go. We already talked about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we started with The
Godfather.
Well,
we discovered on this journey that death is used in many ways in cinema.
Yeah, a lot more than I actually thought.
Yeah.
Funny how you bounce it off somebody and it kind of...
It's used to establish characters and their motivation. It's used to close off... plot points.
It's used to be a part of the character's backstory. It's part of their journey. It's something that they might defy,
right? Maybe if we need to break this down more, we can... The first act deaths, the second act deaths, and the third act deaths.
Ooh.
Right? The first act deaths are the defining moment deaths that establish characters.
Yep.
And the second act deaths are the ones that twist or move the story or take it in a different direction.
Yeah, keep talking.
Right? And then the third act deaths are the closure deaths. You know, the send-offs. Is it the death that you wanted to happen, or is it the death that you didn't expect, or it's the closure? You know, maybe there's something about which act somebody dies in.
My God. The more I talk about this stuff, the more I fall in love with this whole entire fucking hobby. Oh, man. Well,
anyways.
Listener, if you have one of your favorite deaths from movies, I don't want to hear about your personal life. That's going to be tragic. No, I'm kidding. But like, if you have a favorite on-screen death, as mentioned, we got a voicemail.
Your parents were killed in the back lane after the opera and you turned into a vigilante.
Yeah,
a billionaire vigilante.
That I want to talk to you about, Bruce. I do. Also that she has to be wearing pearls. If there's no pearls, then we can't talk.
That dramatic pearls falling to the pavement breaking.
Whose make was it where the pearls are in the hammer of the gun and they... cock back and it pulls one of the iterations of these. The guy gets the gun under the pearls, and when he pulls the trigger, the hammer or the bolt comes back and pulls the pearls off of her neck.
Oh,
it's a flashback sequence or something.
It had to be in slow motion.
It was very much was. But we'd love to hear your opinion. We would love to put your opinion on said show. We have a whole segment dedicated to it. So if you're listening, and don't be shy.
Heck, we even have like an empty seat here. Somebody could join us.
We do.
If you're that opinionated.
Yeah. I would have a walk on. I definitely would. I just need to know, we can do a background check, right? We can do that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Full run through.
Yeah. We'll know everything about you, listener, by the time we're done. But if you got something to say, say it on that voicemail. There's 5 minutes of recording time.
Ooh.
So you can go long. And then the next episode, we can put it on and then other people can hear it.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
This is how we build a community.
Yes.
This would be the lovely voicemail of Winnipeg film community that anybody and anybody can leave something on. So if you're in the film industry, if you're just a fan of film like us, share your opinions, man. That's what they're there for. Real Debaters Pod on Twitter and Instagram for that. Link in the bio. And the Real Debaters Facebook. Real Debaters Podcast on Facebook. Link in bio as well. I think it's a perfect time to create the death of this episode. What do you say?
Oh, yes. Very dramatic.
Yeah.
Should we hop in the convertible and drive off the cliff?
I want us to both lose our parents and turn into superheroes.
Better.
Yeah.
Better. Yes.
I'll be Robin. You be Batman. I know my role.
We'll take anything. Yeah. You know what? I'm not fussy.
I'll be the Tick if he's got a dead parent. I'll be the... that's fine. Yeah. If this is your first time, hit subscribe, like, follow, whatever that option is in your podcast player, listener. That puts us there each and every week. That's the biggest way you can help us. So if you liked what you heard and you want more of us, subscribe the shit out of the show. And we've got interview series, if this is your first time. We've got these Real Talks. We have our flagship shit, which is our debates where we shoot the shit and argue about really random fun stuff. Those are a laugh riot. They're not as deep and intellectual as Mark and me think we are. But yeah, get to know us, man. Go backwards. There's a catalog. We're coming up on 200 episodes. You can believe
that. Wow.
200.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Rogan's got like 1,900.
Yeah.
And I'm nowhere near even interested in being that, but 200's a lot of episodes.
That's a lot of episodes. That's a good base.
Yeah.
It's a good base.
And we got rid of those early ones.
Yeah.
I took those off.
You're getting pretty good at this.
Oh, you should.
What's this production company name that you never really talked about?
Oh.
I saw you kind of slip it in there.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So my video game handle, well done, by the way, on bringing this up.
We'll close in on this. Close on this.
So the Real Debaters Podcast, yes, everybody knows that.
Turn the tables.
Yeah.
I'll interview you, Mike.
Oh, fuck. It's been a while. I don't know if I could do this. My video game handle, I had auto-generated by Xbox when I got an Xbox. And when I started playing online, I was like, give me one. And it called me Sick Bad Panda.
Sick Bad Panda. Nice.
Panda is part of my dialogue with Shauna. We call each other Panda. We have matching panda tattoos, but we each have a panda tattoo. Because pandas are fucking morons. Pandas clumsily work their way through life. They fall, they trip, but somehow they're very dangerous animals. So it's all under the water, right? It's all unassuming, right? And a group of pandas is actually called an embarrassment of pandas.
Oh, very fitting.
So, like, all of this stuff kind of, like, if I had a spirit animal, it would definitely be the fucking panda.
It'd be the panda.
So I was like, well, I like pandas.
A kinship to pandas.
Right, exactly. Yes. So I decided to call the production company that produces the Real Debaters podcast, Sickbed Panda Productions.
Excellent.
So the Real Debaters podcast is brought to you by Sickbed Panda Productions. It's all the same thing. Don't get confused. But, yes, we have a production.
But maybe we'll see something else from Sickbed Panda Productions in the future.
Oh, we'll see a lot of things. There's been a lot of ideas with other people, and it doesn't stop at the podcast. It just started with the name.
Like I said, this is a good foundation.
Yeah, it's got good bones.
It's a good start.
It's good bones.
She's got good bones.
Yeah, fermented. We'll see about what the muscle, but the bones are there.
We're going to tear her down to the studs.
Yeah.
It's got good bones.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck it. Anyways.
All right.
So
I've been Mark Cowell.
Yes, you've been Mark Cowell. I've been Michael Petro. You showed up to where the art of cinema meets the power of debate. Thank you for listening. Watch all the movies, listener. Say bye, Mark.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Spanish ladies.